right, welcome back to another episode of the Appalachian Agorist. I am one of your hosts, Cody, and I'm here with Rob. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing well. Can't complain.
Survived the massive 2 to 3 inches of snow we just got.
Yeah, I don't even think we got that much where I was at, but
yeah, I think we got about 3 inches. But I mean, it melted. They actually treated the roads. I was kind of surprised. I didn't think they would. But everything's pretty much clear. I didn't even plow our road.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of places were ready for this one. It almost made me think that it was going to be worse than it was. I was like, wow, they're like really gearing up for this.
Yeah, exactly. Should I be worried? That's how I felt. The radar. Yeah.
Turns out it was just because they were so unprepared the first time.
Yeah, I think they're trying to save face. Like, that was probably a bit of an embarrassment. You know, they were calling for like 8 to 11 inches, and they didn't do a single thing. They didn't do anything. And I think they had to save some face. And even though we all knew this would probably be nothing, they acted like they should have acted the first time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, before we get into today's topic, quick shout out. I've been meaning to do this for like 2-3 weeks now, and I apologize. We have a new Patreon subscriber, Patrick. Thank you, Patrick, for your support. If you're interested in our Patreon, you can find us on Patreon at Appalachian Agorist. We do have some Patreon exclusive content, and we're getting ready to do some more in the near future. Now that we've kind of got our feet back underneath us, we'll be rolling back into our standard schedule for your AA meeting. We have two levels on there. We got a $5 and a $2. It's outlined on the website. So if you feel so inclined, we would appreciate your support. But as for today's topic, we've been talking about doing this for a while, so we've decided we're just going to go ahead and roll with it. We're going to talk about fencing today, and in particular, we're going to talk about the different kinds of fencing and what you might need based on your situation. Everybody has a different goal with their fence, and they have a varying budget on what they can spend. And there are some ways that you can kind of modify a fence to fit your goals and your budget. And we'll go ahead and start talking about, you know, which might be the best for you. So, to get started, there's two kinds of fences. You have physical fences, which, you know, you could equate to a chain link fence or a privacy fence, something that is a physical barrier designed to stop things from going over or under it by creating a wall of sorts. And then you have psychological fences, which do create a wall of a kind, but they can easily be gone over or under or through. And the only thing stopping things from going through, under, or over is electricity. So you can think of this as a electrified and non-electrified fence, with electrified being the psychological fence. Most of the time when it comes to livestock, I'm a fan of psychological fences for paddock separation, and I like the perimeter fence to be physical. Everyone's different. Some people like psychological all the way around, and some people like physical all the way around. Some of the main drawbacks of a physical fence is going to be price. When we start talking about physical fences, the price just goes through the roof. because it takes a lot more material.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably the biggest reason why you don't see a whole lot of people doing physical fences, you know, for, you know, outside the property, and then also, like, for paddock separations. It's just way too expensive.
Right, yeah. So, in a perfect world, if I have a homestead or a farm of kinds, we can start by thinking about where we want our fence. And when we talk about fence construction, I like to start with the knowns rather than the unknowns, especially if you're just moving onto a property and you're trying to get established. There's a lot of things up in the air. Things might change over the years. What you originally thought your plan would be has a way of deviating rather quickly when you start to realize, you know, that wasn't the exact place I wanted to put something. So I'd like to move it. And when you build a fence and you fork out all that money to build it, this is not the time you want to be redoing it. It's not impossible to salvage a fence, but when you remove it and relocate it, but it is very difficult, and it without heavy machinery, it can be very time consuming. Yeah. And even with heavy machinery, it is still pretty time consuming, especially if you're using if you're demolishing a physical fence. So when I say I like to start with the knowns, there are certain things that are very unlikely to change on a piece of property. The first of which being your property line. You know, unless you're going to sell or buy more land, that's pretty much set in stone. So we can assume, like, hey, we're going to fence out the entire property. That may be pasture, that may be woods. It really doesn't matter. We're just going to fence that out. At least personally, that's how I look at it. And I would, if funds allow, I would like a physical fence. For the knowns, the things that won't change. Some of the other knowns we can talk about is your waterways. So if you're fencing out your waterways to keep your livestock away from them, they're pretty much not going to change either. They may change over a couple hundred or thousands of years, but by then I think your fence will be pretty much absorbed back into the earth. So, you know, yep. For all intents and purposes, that's a known. We know that is not changing, short of a huge natural disaster or something. When we talk about physical fences, we have a couple different options. We have board fences, woven wire fences, and we have welded wire fences. I think that just about covers, and you have privacy fences, but we're not really going to talk about privacy fences. I don't think.
No, I think in the context we're talking about, a little unrealistic.
Yeah. So those are pretty much the three kinds. What are you partial to, Rob?
Again, it kind of like, it all depends on, you know, where, cause I think where I'm working on the fence line is going to make a difference. At first I was not a fan of board fencing, but I've come actually to really like that. I liked a couple jobs ago, we did woven wire with three board, and I really liked that. But again, that's very expensive to do around your entire property. I do like board fencing a lot. That's probably what I would do at this point in time, at least.
Yeah, I love board fencing. It is definitely the most aesthetically pleasing fence, in my opinion. I love three board. I don't really like four board. The problem with board fencing is, in my opinion, Just the durability of it. The boards, you know, you have two kinds of boards. You have, it's going to change based on where you are in the country, but in the Eastern United States, we have plenty of oak and we have plenty of poplar. So those are pretty much the two boards that we see the most of. And that's what we use because they're both fairly economical and they both have pros and cons. So with the oak boards, some of the pros are that they don't have to be pressure treated. White oak is incredibly resilient to the weather and to the conditions that it'll be exposed to. The downside is white oak is a very tight grain wood. It's a hardwood, so it has a tendency to warp and split really badly. If you drive past a fence that's a board fence and you see the boards just going all over the place, they're cracked and whatnot, that is going to be an oak board fence. It just, it warps so badly and cracks when you try and screw or nail it to the post that it really, in my opinion, is not the best option. It's typically used for horse farms where they know their horses are going to chew on the boards and they pick it because it doesn't have to be pressure treated, so it won't hurt the horse. Another downside to oak is it's incredibly freaking heavy. It is got to be three times the weight of poplar. At least.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can't explain how much heavier it is than poplar. These boards that we're using are 16 feet long, 6 inches wide, and 1 inch thick. And when we say this, these are rough cut boards, so they are a true 6 inches wide and a true inch thick. That is the standard. That is our standard and my standard for a board fence. Anything from Home Depot or Lowe's or any store like that is not acceptable, in my opinion. And pine is not the best option anyway. Some of the benefits of oak, though, are that, like I said, it's an incredibly hard wood. So if you're working with horses and you're trying to break them and, you know, you're expecting that fence to be challenged a little bit, you know, some people like oak for that reason. I've never seen a horse break in any board fence, though. I haven't seen it. I'm definitely partial to the poplar for boards. 100% a poplar fan. It's lighter. It doesn't crack as bad. It doesn't warp as bad. It's pressure treated. It lasts longer. And I don't have horses, so I really don't care if it gets chewed on by a horse. It's not my problem. I just won't run into that. So I use poplar and it's cheaper. So I'm a big fan of poplar. Once again, 16 by 6 by 1 as far as the dimensions go.
Yeah, like I said, it all gets back to like what is your intended use,
exactly,
and then the planning you do ahead of time is like could lead you down the road to like the better option,
right? And you know, I'm not a big fan of board fence for cattle. Cattle will stick their head through fences and try and eat on the other side. They're big. They're going to be leaning on these boards. And it's just, I don't want my animals on my fence. I don't want big animals, especially challenging that fence. And horses do this as well. They'll lean and scratch themselves on the fence. And over time, you'll notice that these fence posts get pushed outwards because the animals just challenge it. They lean against it. They scratch on it. You know, they're just going to naturally do that. Now, when it comes to a board fence, if you decide to go this route, a lot of times what we see, we being Rob and I, and this is a huge pet peeve of mine, I hate this, is you'll drive down the road and you'll see this beautiful board fence for horses, and the boards are on the roadside of the post. So you'll have the post and then you see nothing but boards, essentially. And technically, that's not a correctly built fence. The boards should be on the animal side. In all honesty, wire, boards, whatever the fencing material is, it should be on the animal side. And the reason is, if we nail the boards on the outside, over time, they will start to work their way loose. And with these animals pushing on them, they will push the boards off. Whereas if we put them on the inside, they have to break the board or bend the post completely over to render the fence useless. So I am a big advocate of, unless this is just an estate fence and you're just trying to impress the people driving past your house or impress your neighbors or take pretty pictures, you need those boards on the animal side. I feel that way personally. So if you come to my house, you'll notice my boards are on the outside of the fence, which is backwards of what I just said. Well, at my house, my fence is around the garden. I'm not keeping animals in, I'm keeping animals out. So in that case, I want the boards on the outside of the fence, which is the animal side in this case. So if you're truly trying to build a proper fence, just know that the hardware and the boards, that all goes on the animal side.
I guess like the only exception is like if you're doing curves and stuff, at least for wire.
Yeah.
I am personally a big fan of like it, like do weaving in and out when I have to for like significant curves. I try to stay away from curves, but if I do have one, like I like weaving in and out instead of trying to like force. And it also depends on how long the stretch of wire is. Like if you have to push it back towards the post to staple it, like I prefer not to do that. But
yeah. I guess
boards will always be one side or the other.
Yeah. Let's touch on, we'll work into that. Let's talk about the posts we use and how far apart they are and how we do curves. And in regards to board fence, obviously these boards are just nailed or screwed to the post and they're 16 feet long. One of the biggest mistakes that I see homeowners do, and I've done this myself, so if you've done this, you're in good company. You're like, oh, the boards are 16 feet long, I'll just do 8-foot spacings. You are setting yourself up to be short. When we run boards, we space all our posts at 7'9". That gives us 3 inches of play and room for error over an 8-foot section. And it gives us 6 inches of room for error over the 16-foot section. So, we use 7-foot long posts that are pressure treated pine and 5 to 6 inches in diameter. A lot of farmers and a lot of people use 3 to 4 inch diameter post, and just my opinion, that's unacceptable. I know I'm going to get kickback on that. That's not acceptable in my mind. The smaller diameter will rot faster. It's easier to push over. They are less expensive if you're on a tight budget and you just can't afford 5 to 6 inch diameter post. I would personally consider a different fence other than a board fence before I move down in diameter. That's just me.
I agree. The size difference is significant when you actually like have them next to each other. I agree. I personally wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Plus, when you start getting into smaller diameter posts, especially with board fence, these posts are round. So you only have a small area where you can toenail these boards into the post as it is. And as you go down in post size, you're just weakening that connection point. And that's the entire basis of a board fence, is it's a physical fence. So that is my recommendation. Now, if you start to do curves instead of corners with a board fence, this is going to be hard to imagine. But if we imagine a line of post and we're looking down them, they should all be in a straight line. The middle of the post should all line up. And say we're looking down a fence line and we're curving it to the left, we'll say. As we begin our curve, we ideally want we'll imagine three posts, and the closest will be number one, the middle post will be number two, and post number three will begin our curve to the left. As we look down post one and two, the middle of those two posts should line up and come in line with the right side of the third post, so that the third post is only half of a post width out of line. And then when we drive the fourth post, post two and three, the middle should line up with the right edge of the fourth post, and so on until we complete our curve. It's a bit challenging when you're new at it, but you're dealing with a series of variables here. You're dealing with the 7'9" spacing. You're dealing with the post being perfectly plumb up and down on two different sides. And now we're dealing with a fourth variable of the exact placement of the post on the ground. So curves can be a little bit challenging. If you're new to fencing, I would recommend you just stick to corners. They're a bit easier. Do you share those thoughts or?
Yeah. I mean, I would consider myself like newer to that. You know, like I feel like I've finally gotten the hang of it. But it does take time in doing it, and also, watching people and learning from how they do it. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of curves. I like straight lines and corners, just not even due to difficulty, just to the way it looks. But there's some, I know you can probably touch on this. There's some like legitimate reasons why you should stay away from corners outside of like the legitimate corner of the fence. But yeah, definitely, it takes time to learn that curve and get it right, And if you're trying to save time and money, it's, definitely worth just sticking to corners.
Yeah.
Until you learn how to do it.
Yeah, corners are kind of a double-edged sword for me. The thing I don't like about corners is if we take an acre of land that's a perfect square and we just fence the square, we get the full acre. If we take that same plot of land and draw a circle, we just lost the corners, whether that's for grazing or crops or whatever it may be, or just yardage for your dogs or something. You lost it. They don't have access to it. So, and if they do have access to it, then your fence doesn't work. So either way, they shouldn't have access to those corners. If we do a curve, the thing about curves that most people do like is the aesthetic appeal. When you get into some higher end, estate fencing, especially, for some reason, people tend to like curves. Rob doesn't. I don't really care. I think they can both look equally as nice, but I'm a function guy. I like, if I'm doing this for horses and I'm a horse owner, I will never own horses. But if I did, I would do curves. And the reason I would do curves is horses, another thing I'm going to catch a lot of backlash on, are stupid. Horses are dumb. And horses will run into things. And with a curve, if they're running along the fence line, they're not going to run into a corner. They're going to follow that curve and just keep going around. If you've ever seen like a ring or a riding arena, they're circular. They're never square. This is why. Other animals will follow the curve as well, but once again, if you're doing it with cattle, you just lost the corner for grazing, and that's important. As those corners add up, if you're talking about 20, 30 paddocks and they're all circular, you've lost a ton of land, a ton of land. So, you know, I don't think a lot of our listeners are going to be fencing horses, but if you do, just know that's what the curves are typically for. But I mean, you touched on wire fences, and this is, board fences are probably the simplest to build, in all honesty. The last thing I'll say is if you look at a board fence that is properly built, they won't have 8-foot boards. It's not going to be, okay, this section has 8 feet, then the next section has 8 feet. I mentioned they're 16 feet long. And the reason that is we stagger the boards. So on a 3-board fence, a top, middle, and bottom board, the top and middle board will run 16 feet. The middle board will run 8 feet for just one section. And then the middle will run 16 as well. So the boards are offset, and that gives it strength. That kind of interlocks everything, kind of like a finger joint in woodworking. So if you just take two pieces of wood and put them together, that's not going to be very strong, like face to face. But if you cut grooves out and interlock them, that gives a lot more surface contact and naturally makes it stronger. So that's the last main thing about board fencing, is you want to stagger those boards. If you're having trouble finding 16-foot boards, check places that are like co-ops. Farm co-ops have them. Tractor Supply is not going to have them. Lowe's is not going to have them. It's going to be places like farm co-ops, local building companies. They tend to be more niche. But ask around. You can find them. If you notice somebody has one, or if there's an agricultural fencing company, call them up and just say, hey, where do you get your boards from? And they'll probably tell you. I mean, our company owner would tell you if you called. And then he'd say, well, do you want us to build it and try and get a sale? Which, you know, is understandable. But so yeah, that's about it for board fencing. There's nothing really fancy about it. 7'9" spacing. Last thing I'll say, this is with all fences, though. What do you do if the line you're fencing doesn't equate to an even 7'9" spacing? You know, you don't want all this beautiful spacing and then a 4-foot section at the end. That'll just look, it'll look wrong. It won't be pretty. It'll be functional, and if you don't care, that's fine. But if you do care and you want to take some pride and make it look good, like we try to do, when you're about 150 feet out or so, you need to stop digging or driving your post and measure it out. And I'm going to just throw a situation out for example, and you may have to come back and listen to this to fully get the formula. But here's an example. So say we stop short and we're 132 feet from where we want the fence to end. So we take 132 and divide it by our post spacing, which is 7'9". 9 inches is 0.75 feet, not 0.9 feet. There's 12 inches in a foot, not 10. So we need to remember that 9 inches is 3/4 of a foot, so 0.75. So we take 132 and we divide that by 7.75. That gives us, well, that's a bad example because it gives us 17.03. So that worked out really well. Let's try 168. So we take 168 divided by 7.75. Perfect. That gives us 21.67 and a bunch of numbers afterwards. So we know we have more than 21 spaces left, but we have less than 22. So we then take that 162, I believe it was, right? Divided by
168.
168 divided by 23. Was that right? 168 divided by 6. Oh, okay. So it's going to be 22. So 168 divided by 22. That gives us 7.3 or 7.63 feet as a spacing. Well, that's what our spacing needs to be. How do we figure out what 0.63 is? We know it's 7 feet and 0.63 feet after that. So the easiest way to do it, I'm not going to get into why the math works, although it's not overly complicated. We just take that number, which is 7.63, we minus 7. So now we have 0.63 and a bunch of numbers, and we times it by 12. And that number is 7.6. So our spacing is 7 feet, 7 inches, 0.5. So 7 feet and 7.5 inches will get us pretty damn close to where we want to end. And that's all we do it. And we call that a blend. So essentially, we're just taking the remaining feet, finding out how many spaces it would be, and converting that into the actual space length. I know that's complicated, but if you go back and re-listen, I think you can make sense of it. And if not, you can reach out to me if you run into this, and you know, I'll give you a hand, or Rob can give you a hand. And yeah. So I think that pretty much,
it's not too complicated.
Yeah, it's confusing at first, and the easiest mistake to make is when you get that seven, the original 7 point, whatever it is, you're like, oh, that's just inches. And it's not inches, because it's 12 inches to a foot, not 10. So essentially, yeah, you just have to find the percentage of 12, and that gives you your feet.
Yeah. And then when you're spacing it out, don't forget, like, it's 12 inches. So, like, when you're adding it up, it's easy to be like, oh, you know, it's when you're doing it in like 7, you know, and 9 inches, it's easy to like think of it as 10, and then it'll throw you off big time if you don't.
Right. So essentially, when you get 7'9" spacings, a lot of people will be like, oh, okay, the first space is 7'9", the next one will be 15'8". But that's not the case. It's actually going to be 15'6". And it doesn't sound like a big deal, but once you do that 22 times in a row, if you make that mistake, you're going to be way short. Like, you're going to be like, you're going to be in the same boat as like, oh, look at all these pretty sections. And then there's a 4 foot section at the end. So,
except you just wasted a whole bunch of time.
Yeah, you wasted a bunch of time, and you're just like, why isn't this working? Well, there you go. So, I mean, I think that's pretty much it to board fencing. That's definitely the easiest kind of fence to build. It's also probably the most expensive kind of fence to build, because your post spacing is – well, hello there, Cash. your post spacing is short. And then you have a bunch of boards to buy and a bunch of screws to buy. And yeah, man, there's just so much to talk about too, with fence height too. Just so you know, with the post, like I said, we use 7 foot long posts. We typically get them at least 28 inches in the ground. At least somewhere in there. And then we build the fence height around 48 inches, and we usually do about 10 to 11 inches between the boards on a 3-board. But you can play around with that and determine what you like. And the easiest way to maintain that spacing is cut a little piece of wood that's, you know, if you're doing 10-inch spacing between the boards, cut a 10-inch piece of wood and put it between there, and now every single one will be the same.
Maybe we can do a Patreon exclusive of the the method that we use to put up the boards, because I know that's
Like, there's once nobody you understand faster.
Like how that.
Nobody's faster at board fencing than us. Like, it's a system. I mean, we can we can easily put up, if we're trying and we're working hard, we could do 2+ bundles a day, which is 210 boards. And that includes laying them out, cutting them, and getting everything done. So,
When you get the system down, it gets really quick.
The more we talk about it, the more I realize, like, I thought this would be very, very simple to explain. And now I'm like, oh, but we haven't talked about the top line. And it's like, shit.
I don't even know how you explain that.
I'm going to do my best. So, man, I feel like we're just going to confuse a bunch of people, but I'll do my best.
Yeah.
So as we look across a landscape that we're fencing, we have rolling hills, sharp dips, this, that, and the other. This is more of an aesthetic thing than it is a function thing. So what we don't want is a bunch of jagged edges that go up, down, up, down, you know, up, down, and it just looks ugly. What we aim for is a nice flow from low grade to high grade. If there's a sudden dip, a lot of times we'll just skip over it and just make it smooth. And we can add a section of wire or a fourth board or something below so that nothing goes under if we're concerned about that. But we really try to make our fences functional and aesthetically pleasing so that when you look at them, it's like, wow, that's a beautiful, beautiful fence. And the way we do that is we take a screw and say the top board is going to be at 48 inches. And we'll put a screw at 48 inches. And then we'll go down, you know, 5 posts or so and put another screw at 48 inches. And we'll do this throughout the entire line or, you know, as far as is reasonable to tackle at one time, which is probably about at most 500 feet of fencing. And then we tie a string to the two screws at the end. And we just set the string on the screws in the middle. And we can adjust that string line to where it flows nice and even. And once we're happy with how it looks and we can visualize that's where the top board will go, we go around and with a pencil, we just mark where the string is. And that's where we hang the boards and everything underneath is a 10-inch spacing or so. And that's kind of how it's done. And the same can be done on wire fences, but you know, like Rob said, this is probably going to have to be one of those things where we do a Patreon exclusive like video or a picture series and explain it if people really want to get into how to make the perfect fence. Because a lot of people have the misconception that this is just like dig a hole, put a post in the ground, screw a board to it. And there, it's just like any other thing that you do with your hands, when you're a true craftsman at it, like you can make it look damn good. But I think that pretty much tackles board fencing. We can, if you're good with that, we can kind of roll into wire because I think more people are going to be using wire than boards for livestock.
Yeah, I agree.
So one of the main differences between a board fence and a wire fence is what we call fence tension. So on a board fence, there is no fence tension. The boards are just screwed or nailed to the post and they just sit there. That's it. There's nothing pulling on the post in either direction. Well, minimally. As boards shrink, they will slightly, but the board will crack before the post leans. With wire, that is not the case. Regardless of what type of wire you're using, you want the wire, if it's woven wire, you want it tight. Like you want it really tight. And on the animal side, like I said, always on the animal side. And what'll happen if you just build a a fence that's wire, like a board fence, and then tighten the wires, the two end posts are going to pull into each other substantially. And it's not going to be like, oh, it's just got a little lean. Like, you can get this wire tight enough that it'll rip them damn near to like 60 degrees off. And that's really, really bad. Because over time, immediately you're going to notice that that's not right. And over time, it's just going to become absolutely useless. So to prevent that, what we do is we build braces. And we have posts that we put on the end of a line, which is a termination post. So anytime we start or stop a wire fence in a line, we're going to use a bigger post. So we're going to use an 8-foot long post instead of a 7-foot long post. And you can get away with an 8-foot long post that's 5 to 6 inches. Personally, when I did mine, I upgraded it to 6 to 7 inches. Rob and I just did a fence that they upgraded it to 7 to 8 inches in diameter. And that was absolutely overkill for that style of fence. It was a high tensile fence, not a woven wire fence. On a woven wire fence, I would consider that's still overkill, but I would just say that's like somebody that really wants it to last. But the moral of this is you're going to want an 8-foot post, and you're going to want it at least, at the minimum, I would really like to see them 6 inches in diameter. I don't want a small 5 to 6. I want a fat 5 to 6, 8-inch or yeah. eight.
I'm more of a 7 to 8 guy, but
yeah, I'm a 6 to 7. giggity. So anyway, with the termination post, that's what you're looking for. And I want those things the same height as the rest of the post, which is usually going to be around 54 to 56 inches. So we're going to drive those 3 to 3.5 feet. I've driven them 4 feet in the ground before. Honestly, that's a bit overkill, but we've done it. So anyway, you have that big termination post, and with wire fencing, you can get away with longer post spacings. You don't need that 7'9" post spacing unless you're going to do wire with boards on top, which we do. And it gives it a very nice aesthetic. It gives you that look of a board fence, but gives you the function of a wire fence. That's what I built at my house. So anyway, that is truly the most expensive fence to build, because you have a lot of posts to dig and drive. You've got wire to stretch, staples to attach the wire, boards to put on top of the wire, crimps to get the wire connected together. And like, it's just a lot of materials involved with that kind of fence. But for a true just woven wire fence, you can get away with up to, I would say, 20-foot spacings. I'd be pretty comfortable with 20. That's a bit long, but it's not too long. You could do that. So right off the bat, you can cut the amount of posts you have to drive in half at least. So the one exception to that is your brace post. So you have your termination post, and then the next post in line is called your brace post. You want that about 9.5 feet off of the termination post. And the reason for that is we're going to put a post horizontally in between them, so that when we pull the wire, the termination post, which is beefed up already, is braced with another post to help prevent that lean. Now when we build our brace post, essentially, we do a diagonal high tensile wire that is tightened with a ratchet tightener. A lot of times you'll see like a piece of rebar or a wood stick put in, and they tighten it with that, but those fail over time, so we don't do that. Once again, nothing wrong with that. Just realize there's more fence maintenance involved with that. So we use a kind of a ratchet type system where we wrap a piece of wire around the bottom of the termination post, and we wrap it from there to the top of the brace post. And that essentially pulls the top of that brace post towards the termination post with that horizontal post in between them, and it keeps the whole fence from leaning. That is probably going to be very hard to comprehend without a picture. I'll put one on Instagram because I have pictures of some braces I built, and if I can't find one, I have like seven outside my front door. That is critical.
It's a crucial step too.
Yeah, it's critical. Yeah. Like you cannot successfully build a fence that will last if it is woven wire without a brace. It's not going to work. There's a ton of different ways to do it. There's lazy ways. There's ways that are more homeowner friendly, but I think our way is the most solid bomb proof way. So I'll share that on Instagram.
Yeah. I tried to, on the first fence I built, I tried to half-ass brace it, and it just doesn't work. Like, you need to make sure, like, you take the time to do that properly if you want it to hold up and not ultimately start leaning.
And honestly, even with a properly built brace, you can still rack that entire brace if you get the wire tight enough. So, like, that is the two most important parts of a wire fence are making sure the posts are solid and making sure your braces are as bomb-proof as you can get them. Like, you want them sturdy, like, very sturdy. So, anyway, we'll go ahead and move on, I guess. But with a woven wire fence, essentially you're going to build your braces, get your posts in the ground, and then you're going to roll out this big roll of wire, whatever you choose, and I'm a big fan of woven wire over the welded wire, and there are some brands that I would stay away from. Red Brand is trash. It just is. It's a really low-grade wire. It's welded together. You can break it very easily. Just tightening it will break the weld. So if you're actually
building... Is that the cheap Tractor Supply?
Yes, yes. Do not buy that. Yeah. Wire, it will break, it will fail, your fence will be garbage, and the money you thought you saved will just be gone down the drain when you go and buy a reputable brand. The brand I always recommend is Stay Tough. Once again, you're not going to find it at Tractor Supply, you're not going to find it at Lowe's, and the difference between the two is the welded versus woven wire. A lot of people just call it all welded wire. But there is such a thing as woven wire, and woven wire is not welded. It is truly woven in a knot, and it will not break. You can pull on it with a truck, and that post is going to rip out of the ground probably before that wire breaks. It's just not going to happen. And it's like guaranteed to last like 50 something or 60 years. Like, it's galvanized. It's really sturdy stuff. And it comes in a variety of sizes. Like, the boxes can be 2x4 inches, which is really expensive. Or you can get 12-inch squares if you're doing, you know, cattle or something like a bigger animal. It comes in a pattern where it's narrow at the bottom and gets wider at the top. So if you're doing like a garden or something, and you don't want like little creatures getting in, it stops them on the bottom, and then as it gets to where they can't climb through, it gets bigger, and that just kind of saves you some money. You know, if you're doing a goat fence, you may want a 4x4 wire, or a 6x6 wire, something like that, but it just comes in a variety, and if you need some help picking it out, once again, you can reach out to us, or just hop on your favorite search engine and just do some research. Just be leery of what you research, because this is kind of a niche market for fence building. Agricultural fencing is its own deal, and there's a lot of people out there, especially farmers. I run into so many damn farmers that try to tell me, like, oh, you don't need to do all that. And it's like, well, I'm sitting here replacing your freaking fence, so are you really going to tell me what I do and don't have to do? Because your fence obviously didn't last. Yeah, farmers are not fencers, and fencers are not farmers. I'll just say that. Anyway, So if you need help, just reach out or do your own research. Results may vary. But anyway, so let's say you have an 800-foot fence line that you're trying to do with wire. The issue becomes when you have a 500-foot roll or a 200-foot roll. Like, you don't build a brace every 200 or 500 feet and just start over. What we actually do is we crimp these pieces, these rolls of wire together, and they sell those once again at your standard co-op fencing supply place. And there's a special decrimp based on the size of the wire. We use 2 to 3 long sleeve crimps. I like the long sleeves a little better. There's some times where I've had to use a short sleeve, but that's just because the wire was so tight, I couldn't get a long sleeve. So when you crimp them, just make sure that both wires that are being crimped together protrude past the crimp, so you get a solid crimp, and crimp the whole thing. Really make it solid, because you're going to be putting a lot of tension on this. So you crimp the wire together, you get it rolled out, and then you have to actually attach it to the fence. So you, at your termination points, you're going to do what we call hard stapling. And you know what, man, you want to walk through like hard stapling and, you know, move into tensioning and whatnot. I got to get some more coffee.
Sure. Yeah. So basically on the, on your termination post, you're going to set it. You're going to pull enough wire past that you can wrap it around. And then wherever that ends, you want to hard staple that to the termination post, which hard stapling, for those who don't know, means every vertical piece of wire gets stapled, and it's stapled all the way into the post, because this is, again, what you're going to be tensioning against, so you want to make sure it holds. Once you have it hard stapled, that's when you can roll out however much wire you have. Again, if you... you know, if it's not one roll worth, you can lay it out, get your second roll, crimp it together, and then keep rolling out. I'm sure we'll talk about length and tensioning for those different lengths in a second. But once you get it rolled out to where it's going, you can start to tension it. There's a lot of different ways you can do it. If you have the luxury of heavy machinery, you can use that. I've used my truck and like homemade stretcher bars, which is just like a two pieces of 2x4 boards bolted together. You can get legitimate stretcher bars. You can pull from the end. You can take stretcher bars and do what we call a middle pull, which is, you know, find somewhere in the middle ish. Put the tension bars up, and then use a ratchet to basically tension them towards each other, towards the middle. And then you cut off the slack and end up crimping those together. It all kind of just depends on, how long the stretch is, whether there's a lot of curves. We've tried some pretty long curves at our job, and sometimes you have to do multiple tensions based on because the more curves you have, the more friction that fence is going to have when you try to tighten. So you can end up with it tight, like really tight on one side, and then like somewhere down the line it's like completely loose because it's just like the tension made it seem like it was tight.
We've
broke the wire too.
Yeah.
Definitely make sure your crimpers are set to actually crimp it.
Yeah, this goes back to what Rob was saying about weaving around posts. So if we picture a curve with the wire on the inside, as we tighten it, it's going to draw a straight line, and we have to push it up against the post if we want to keep it all on the inside. When I'm building a proper fence, I prefer to do it that way, but it is a massive pain in the ass because you need enough tension to keep it tight, but enough slack that you can push it to the curve to staple it up against the post. So it's this balancing act, and It's really difficult, especially if you're by yourself. Don't even try it. If you're by yourself, just it's much easier to stay along the inside. And then when you come to a curve, just bounce to the outside. And once the curve's over, come back to the inside. The issue with that is when you're doing a series of curves in one pull, like we were doing, even though we know better, and Rob and I know better, but we're told to do it this way. What happens is there's a point at which the friction is just too much to go around the post. You're going to start pulling post inward. You're going to start really jacking up your fence. And when that happens, it's time to build a double H brace somewhere in the middle and do two separate pulls. But we'll get into that in a second. The weaving is much easier by yourself. So I personally recommend that. You know, when Rob talks about machinery, you can use a pickup truck to stretch wire with a stretcher bar or with two homemade 4x4s that you just sandwich around the wire and tighten the bolts on.
Works well. I've done it.
Yeah. And I used a tractor. I used my tractor for mine. I just ratchet strapped a stretcher bar to the draw bar on my tractor. And I just slowly started pulling tension until I was happy with it. Park the tractor and hard staple the end that is not. And that's your end pull. The alternative is what Rob was talking about with the middle pull. And that's, you know, a bit more difficult. It takes some practice. You probably won't get it right your first time. You probably won't get the end pull right on your first time. But, you know, that's part of homesteading. And that's part of building your own self-sufficiency and building a skill. Like, you're going to have some trials and tribulations and some failures. So don't get down on yourself. It happens. As far as if you do try to middle pull, I recommend the use of come-alongs. I just think they're way easier. You can tighten them and control the ability. You have the ability to loosen them with control, whereas with a ratchet strap, it's kind of all or nothing. Like, once you loosen it, it's going to fly out. So,
I blanked on the what I was looking for, but yeah, come-along is what I was trying to refer to, but I guess you could use a ratchet strap if you wanted to.
Yeah. We've used them at work in a pinch, just when we have two crews and one doesn't have the come-alongs, we have used them in a pinch. So once you have your wire tight and both ends are hard stapled and the wire is up, essentially then we go around and hard staple every post. And if it's something like 13 horizontal wires in a 2x4, or it's a 6x6 with 9, you don't have to staple every horizontal on the middle post, just on the termination post. And when we say hard staple, we mean those staples need to be subsurface of the post. They really need to be driven as far as you can get them in on every single wire that makes up the entire 48 inches of welded wire, or 42 inches if you have goat wire or something like that. But typically every third one is more than acceptable for a soft staple. And a soft staple is not holding any real tension. It's just keeping the wire up against the post. And that's really all that is. So, you know, if there's like a 16th or 8th inch gap between the wire and the staple on your line post or the middle post, that's more than acceptable. I guess the last thing to touch on with wire fencing is gates. If you have there's two things. If you have an 800-foot line and there's a gate in the middle, you actually need four braces because that's two independent lines. You know, you have four termination points, the outsides and then where the gate is. So you're going to have four braces to build there. If you only build the two ends, the posts by the gates are going to rip out, and then your gate won't work and your fence won't work. So the only other thing we haven't touched on is a double H brace and what their reason is. You'll hear a lot of fencers debate over double H braces. Our company I can't believe this, but our company doesn't do them. I personally don't agree with it because it makes stretching wire a giant pain in the ass. And the reason is when you have a, we, what was that one stretch we did? 1300 feet?
Or, yeah, it was, yeah, I think it was like 1350.
Yeah, it was a huge single pull of wire. And we were using a skid steer, like a huge piece of machinery, and we could not get the wire tight. And that's because you're trying to stretch too much at once. You got to break it into bite-sized pieces, which I personally feel is 650 feet. That's my opinion. You can look at different fencing organizations from the government. Yes, they exist. I didn't believe it either. But NRCS, I think, is like, what, 660 feet? And then you'll see some as low as like 550 feet. But, you know, somewhere around that 600 feet mark, you're going to build what's called a double H brace. And it's the same thing as a normal brace. It's just instead of one, you have two. And the reason that is to break it up. So if you have a single 800-foot pull, I personally wouldn't do it at 600 feet at that point. I would put it in the middle at 400 feet just to make it look good. But you would pull the first 400 feet and hard staple it to that center post, and then it would have a brace on that side. And then when you go to stretch the next 100 or 400 feet, there's another brace on the other side that it still functions as a brace. So you essentially have three posts that make one brace, which I can show a picture of that too on Instagram, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And if we haven't lost you by now, hopefully you've realized there's a little bit to fencing. I think that pretty much covers it for your physical fences. You want to get into the psychological stuff? That stuff's much easier to do and explain anyway, so.
Yeah, so we're just talking about, like, high tensile and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we can quickly touch on barbed wire. I'll touch on barbed wire real quick. Don't use it. Okay, moving on. No, really, barbed wire is obsolete at this point. Like, there's really no reason. It's cheap, but there's cheaper options that are better, and there's cheaper options that don't hurt your animals and still keep them off your fence. So, yeah, if you do use barbed wire, don't electrify it. If you do use barbed wire, you don't have to get it quite as tight as woven wire. And honestly, I'd put welded wire in the same category as barbed wire. Like, don't use it unless it's for really, really low stress fencing. Like, oh, this is just more of for show than for actual function. Like, oh, I'm keeping my rabbits out of here, whatever, you know, something like that. But regardless, yeah. So when we talk about barbed wire and I say there's cheaper things that are better, what I'm talking about is high tensile, and that's a psychological fence. Everybody has probably seen high tensile. It's just a single galvanized steel wire that is just stretched out and stapled to a post. There's an alternative called hot coat, which is high tensile wire wrapped in a conductive sheathing that is white for high visibility. It's used for horses, and it looks incredible. I love a hot coat fence. We're doing one on our current job, and I already told everybody, like, dibs on the hot coat because I love hot coat. It is incredibly expensive, though. I've never used it on anything.
Yeah, I don't have this. Yeah, I don't have much experience with the hot coat yet, but
yeah, and that's because you typically don't see them. It's just too expensive, and outside of the horse community, there's really nobody that would use it. But as for high tensile, High tensile fences are what I would use in my paddock separation. A lot of people use them for fencing out their property as well because it's cheap and it's, you know, it's a pretty good fence. The issue with high tensile is that it requires a lot of upkeep if you're going to use it as a perimeter fence, like a hard stop around your property. You know, if it's running through the woods and it's electrified and there's a bunch of trees on it and limbs and grass and, you know, just shrubs and whatnot, it's not going to work. It's going to ground out on all that debris and it's going to render the fence pretty much useless. So that's why I'm a fan of woven wire on the outside of properties, because although I would really try not to let it get overrun, if it does get overrun, it's not the end of the world because that wire is still there. They are not going to get through it. End of the story. So when you see high tensile, you have a bunch of different kinds. You've got single strand, which is just one wire ran across a couple inches off the ground, and like you'll see that for hogs. And then you have two strand, which is for like big hogs, or you know, hogs that aren't accustomed to respecting an electrified fence yet. You'll see three strand for cattle. You'll see five strand for goats. You'll see five strand for goats as like a minimum. You'll see seven strand for goats. You'll see anywhere between one and seven strands, typically being 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7. Now, obviously, the more strands you have, the less of a gap between the wires. So the smaller the animal, the more strands you'll need. With the exception of pigs, which are short, and once you teach them to respect it, you can get away with a single wire. If we're going to run a high tensile fence, or any fence for that matter, and we talk about the top line, the top board, the top wire, the top of the welded wire, whatever it may be, we really want to try and put that at the nose height of the target animal. So if it's cattle, it may be, you know, 44-ish inches. If it's a pig, it might be 10 inches. That's why you can kind of get away with a single strand. So that's what our target is, and that kind of determines how many strands we need. If we're only fencing in small animals, obviously we're not going to run a 7-strand fence. There's just no need to do it. And with high tensile, that wire has tension, so we're going to need braces. I personally feel that anything under 3-strand doesn't need a brace. I mean, it's just not that much tension. They're not going to be as tight as a woven wire fence. They just don't need to be because they're electrified. Once they touch it, they're going to back off of it. That being said, anything above 3-strand, I want to see a brace. Some people will say 3-strand doesn't need a brace. I personally would install a brace on 3-strand. And the reasoning why is because, like Rob and I experienced, we had a bunch of trees fall on a 3-strand fence. And if the wire is not braced, you run the possibility of jarring those termination posts. When the trees fell on the fence we built, the brace post and the termination post didn't move. It just ripped the wire off the fence. We cut the tree, staple it back up, good to go. Took like an hour to clear probably, 400 or 500 feet of fencing?
Yeah, it was a pretty good amount.
Yeah, it's much easier to repair. It's much easier to keep it functioning from trees and things. It just takes more upkeep than a woven wire fence. For high tensile, trying to think of the most user-friendly way to do it is probably to buy a tube insulator, because the wire cannot touch the post. It has to be insulated from the post. So typically what you'll see is there's a variety of insulators. You don't really, it doesn't really matter which one you use. They all work, but for someone doing it themselves, the way I recommend doing it is wrapping the high tensile around the termination post with a tube insulator, which is going to be about 20 to 24 inches long, and crimping it back on itself. And that's more than sufficient. That's not the way we do it, but we do it the Western way, which is we actually tie knots with our high tensile, and then we use that essentially instead of crimps. It just looks prettier. It's a little bit more craftsmanship. It's the traditional way of doing it. But
it looks good.
It looks real good. It looks damn good.
Especially when you tie them right.
Yeah, when you get it right, it looks good. But for function, any insulator that keeps the wire from touching the post in a crimp works. And then we just use a wheel tightener, or you can use a ratchet tightener, not like a strap down ratchet tightener, but the kind that we use for our brace post, which I, once again, I'll show that on Instagram. But a wheel tightener is what you're going to see. It's just a little wheel, and you turn it, and then you stick a pin in it, and that keeps it from unspooling and losing all your tension. And then you just go around like a welded wire fence and just staple it to the post where you want it. That's kind of the down and dirty of it. They're easy to repair, and they're cheap. They're cheaper than barbed wire. It's less than 4 cents a foot for the welded wire. You can get a for high tensile wire. You can get 4,000 feet of high tensile wire for $120. High tensile wire comes in three strengths: 170K, 200K, and 225K. That's just the PSI rating. We try to use 200. A lot of times you can't find it because everyone's buying it, and we have to settle for 170. Sometimes we beef up to 225. I personally don't see a difference in it. It feels the same. It looks the same. I don't see the big difference. It's the same diameter and gauge of wire. So it's, you know, that's you just high tensile wire. 170 is fine. It's not the best, but it's fine. Yeah. And realistically, that's really getting into the weeds. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. But like I said, variety of insulators. You have fin insulators, which slide on. You have spiral fin insulators, which are more expensive, but they kind of roll on. You have pin lock insulators. You have offset insulators. And there's just not enough time to go into the details of all the different insulators. If I was going to tell someone what to buy, I would just tell them to buy 20-inch to 24-inch tube insulators for the termination post and buy fin insulators and slide them on. And you'll have to count how many posts are in between and then slide it on one side before you actually complete the termination knot or the termination crimp. But
and that will be the biggest pain in the ass you'll have to deal with.
Yeah, and so if you're
counting the motherfuckers, putting them on there.
Yeah, if you're going to do fin insulators, just buy one box of spirals for when you make a mistake, because you're going to. We always make a mistake. Yep. It's like, was it 56 posts?
I don't think we've not. 57
posts. Yeah, like you always lose count.
Then you drop one without realizing.
Yeah, or you leave one behind and like you staple it on, and then it's like 500 feet and you're not going to go pull all those staples off. So it's just, it's, you're going to make mistakes with it. It's cost effective, but it's not user friendly. Whereas pinlock insulators are user friendly, but not cost effective. So pick what you want. But like I said, if I was going to tell someone what to buy, tube insulators, fin insulators, and spiral fin insulators will do you just fine. One thing we haven't talked about with post high tensile is post spacing. The reason high tensile is so economical is rather than doing 7.5 or 7.75 foot spacings or even 20 foot spacings, we can stretch high tensile post spacings out to 40 feet. So we can cover, you know, a large amount of ground with relatively few fence posts. And that makes things cheaper, makes things easier, means less digging, less driving, less everything. And that's why I love high tensile paddock separation, is just because it's cheap, it's easy, and it's effective. You just gotta make sure you upkeep them to keep that electrical current running properly. The last thing I think we really need to talk about with high tensile is how to navigate gates. Obviously, you need a circular flow of electricity. And when you come to a gate, you can't stretch the wire across the gate, because then you can't cross it. So the way we solve that is real simple. We get insulated underground wire and we crimp it on one side of the gate. We staple it to the gate post and we bury it underneath the gate for that 4 to 20 feet, whatever it is. We come back up the other side of the gate and attach it to the other side of the high tensile, and boom, there's your completed circuit. So pretty simple, not that difficult. It doesn't have to be very deep. We've done it as shallow as an inch. You know, it's just really got to be covered. And if you're running your property correctly, the more, this is another good thing to point out, if you're running a regenerative farm, you're going to be building soil over time. So that 1 inch deep should be deeper and deeper. And that's a good thing. The downside is your fence becomes lower and lower as the soil builds. Yeah. The benefit of high tensile is that it's easy to move. You pull the staples and you just loosen the slack and you slide it up an inch and you're back to where you were at, and you just restaple everything in. With high tensile wire, I can't tell you how many times over decades of a fence's construction, we've gone to pull high tensile wire and it's 4 inches deep. And, you know, now the fence is shorter and it's not functioning properly because it's short. The ground has been raised. So that's just a little note of what we've seen. Dude, we could go on and on about this. I mean, I guess real quickly, we can touch gates and how we hang gates, and I guess more specifically the hardware that they come with and how it's trash. if you want to tackle that, if you just want to tackle the gate stuff real quick, I think that'll be more than enough info for the average person to digest.
Yeah, I think so. So there's different grades of gates you can get. I think you know more about that, but that's really not the point. So a lot of the hardware that comes with it, you'll see like the bolts or the hinge that's like screw in, you can just trash those. They're not worth your time. It just takes way too much time and honestly more luck to get those to work properly than it's just not worth it. So we use hinge bolts. The one thing I'll say about the way we do it as a company, we drive the post and then use the hinge bolts to like shorten or lengthen the gap. If it were me, I would drive a post, install the gate, and then drive the other post on the other side. But that's my opinion. I don't know how you feel about that.
I've been trying to get the company to do that for as long as I've been here, man. Like, it's just, especially when you're using two-way latches, you have about an inch of play, and people are like, oh, it's a 16-foot gate with the two-way latch on it. It's 16-2. Measure 16-2 and drive the damn post. That's the mentality that we've encountered. The problem with that is If you know anything about geometry and triangles, the hypotenuse is the longest part. So when you're measuring along the ground, that measurement may not equate to the same distance as you move up the post. If the posts are not perfectly straight or perfectly circular, then you're really going to have a hard time. So I'm with Rob. Drive the hinge post, and then at the very least, put the damn gate up and then drive the second post. Don't drive all your posts, then go get your gates. Like, I think that is so stupid. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah, I'm waiting for us to fuck. It won't be you or me, but like someone's gonna fuck it up eventually.
Well, we fuck it up all the time. Tomorrow, well, yeah, we're gonna go fix one.
Oh, geez. Yeah. But yeah, they come in different sizes. 16s to me are a lot. It just depends on what you need to get through there. I mean, if you like, sometimes you need a 16 foot gate. Sometimes you can get away with a 12. The first fence I built, I put an 8 foot gate. That was just enough to get a mower through it, because that's all I needed to do. It was just keep the dog in. We've seen as small as 4 foot. We put a 4 foot gate in a line of high tensile the other day. Didn't see what the point was, but that's what the client wanted. The key is just make sure the hinge side is downhill, on the downhill side. Otherwise, the gate won't open. And yeah, I mean, like, so we use hinge bolts. We can kind of adjust, especially when we're using the two-way latches. You can kind of pull it in and out with that. You can also get a one-way latch. Depends on what you're going to use it for. Yeah. The key is just to draw your plumb line on the hinge post. And then what we do is we mark a line. We get it kind of where we want it as far as, like, how high on each side. You use the bottom hinge is usually, like, welded to it. So you draw make a line there, and then you can make the line on top, because the top hinge is adjustable. So you can make it somewhere in the middle of you know, where it is and, like, how high you need it to be. Drill the holes. We've definitely learned that Milwaukee drills are the way to go.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And then once you get the bolts in, you put the bottom hinge on first, and then you can usually need a hammer to slide that top hinge up. I guess the one thing I should mention, so the hinges, the bottom one should be facing up and the top one should be facing down. I fucked that up on the first gate I put in, not with the company, but on my own. You think you just want to set it down there, but you really need, you can just take it off. Again, depends on what you're doing with it. The proper way is to have it down so it can't slide up.
Yeah, and I made that mistake. Essentially, both of my hinge bolts were facing up, so the gate just lowered down on it. And it was for my dog.
Yeah.
I was like, no problem. Until my dog lifted the damn gate off the hinges and was gone. And I was like, son of a bitch. Okay, so you have to go in and rotate that top hinge to where it's facing down, and you slide the hinge bolts facing down so you can slide that top hinge of the actual gate onto it and then tighten it down so it doesn't just lift off. That's another mistake that I've made. Gates can be tricky. The key is, you know, just throw a couple blocks of wood down underneath it, step back, look at it, make sure it's the angle you want it. And like Rob said, those hinge bolts need to be on the downhill side, because if you picture a hill where the right side is higher and we put the hinges on the right side and it swings up properly, and we'll say it does, as soon as you pull up in your truck and open that gate and turn your back, it's swinging right back to the closed position. So we put the gate hinges on the, on this case, if the high side is to the right, we'd put it on the left. That way, when we unlatch it, it naturally opens with gravity. So you can drive a truck through it or move your animals through it or whatnot. Besides that, anything above 12 feet, I like to kick the latch side a little high because they start to sag over time. So you kick it a little high, and then as it ages, it kind of settles to where it needs to be, but no more than like an inch or two. 16-foot gates, I always hang them about, I kick them up about an inch and a half or so, just a little bit. And anything over 16 feet, I personally don't recommend. And real quick, I'll touch on the different levels of gates if you're cool with that.
Yeah.
So what Rob was saying in the beginning was there's different quality levels of gates. I personally like brands like Tartar and Baylin. If I'm on a budget, there's nothing wrong with a County Line gate. If I'm fencing in buffalo or cattle or something big, heavy, and that gate horses, if I'm doing something where the client wants to break horses and whatnot, I'm going to get what's called an HD gate, a heavy duty gate. And instead of an inch and a half or whatever the normal gate is, it's 2 inches. They are significantly heavier. You're going to have to kick them up because they're going to sag a lot. But the economy gates, I stay away from them. For Baylin, if you're buying a Baylin gate and it's black with square corners, that's a economy gate. If you're buying a red Baylin, that's also an economy gate. You're going to want to get, if you're looking for a heavy duty gate from Baylin, they're going to be dark green. If you're getting them from Tartar, I can't remember the color off the top of my head, but Tartar makes a dark blue gate, and that's kind of my standard. The gray gate, I don't like. The dark blue from Tartar and from County Line, those are acceptable in my mind. They can last some heavy use for a while, but yeah. And like you said, chuck those screws in the trash. You're going to want to get like 10 or 12 inch long hinge bolts. And yeah, I think that's about it for gates. Trying to think. Yeah, that yeah. Pretty much covers it. So, and the last thing I'll say is never hang any gate that is, in my opinion, over 10 feet off of a post that is not a brace post. A 16-foot gate on a line post where, like, it meets the center of another line, that's no good. I would rather install a poly gap there, like on that one job we did. But, you know, yeah. gates that are above 10, 12-ish feet, they're really going to be hard on a 7-foot post. You're going to want an 8-foot post. And, you know, if you're going to hang it in the middle of the line, account for that and make sure that it is an 8-foot post. Even if it's the same size diameter, you want that post really solid at a minimum.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sure. That's your knocked my chandelier down. went to stretch. That's pretty much your crash course in fencing. One final thing about welded wire is if you don't like the look of welded wire, check out your favorite search engine. Just look up welded wire fence with top board. And that's a nice economical way to make a pretty fence. Most of our dog fences are like that. You know, they're 2x4 squares, and we sink that wire down to the ground pretty close. And a lot of people are like, well, are they going to go under it? If you tighten the welded wire enough to how it should be and it's properly tightened, your dogs aren't going underneath it. As long as it's on their side. If it's on the non-animal side, there's a chance they'll go under it. So, like I said, I always like the animal side.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much the crash course in fencing. Hopefully you're not more confused or more intimidated than when you maybe first thought about building your own fence. But like I said, if you have questions, reach out to us and we're more than happy to give you a hand and some advice. And if you're in the area, just hit us up. Maybe we can come out and help.
Yep.
Well,
no. I think that about wraps it up.
Well, that's that. Till next time. But yeah, check us out. I'm just gonna like say, like, I might as well not even have a Twitter. So like, if you're on Twitter, I apologize. Like, you can, I check it every so often, every week or two. And I'm just not that active, but we're @AgoristPod on Twitter. I'm far more active on Instagram @AppalachianAgorist. Yeah, so reach out to us there. And if you're so inclined, feel free to jump in the Discord. We have so many talented tradesmen and homesteaders in the Discord. Like, if you're looking to tackle a project and you need someone, I mean, we've got engineers, welders, obviously fence builders. We've got electricians. We've got maintenance personnel for, like, commercial buildings. We've got anything you can imagine. If I didn't say it, engineers, like all sorts of stuff in there. So a lot of good people in there, lock picking, obviously. So yeah, hit me up for the Discord link. But I think that's it.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Yep. All right, guys, till next time.
To the place, the neon lights, and the whiskey that we're